Welcome back to Give Me Some Truth. Still, are you okay over there?
I think I am.
He's had some slight mic issues, and it looks like his mic's ready to like drop down at any point here. But, you know, someday we'll have some legitimate mic arms. I don't know.
This podcast could be Sill's drop the mic moment.
It's terrible. yeah, you got Stan, myself, Clint, and Sill in the booth here today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about market expectations, a little bit of a review of the current market, and a little bit of a, we don't really prognosticate, but at least a little bit of our views going forward about what's happening right now. So, I think I'll turn it over to you first about some of the topics that you'd like to highlight today on the podcast.
Sure. Well, so first of all, looking at what's happened in markets in the third quarter, you know, we made new all-time highs, right? At the end of August, very beginning of September. So there's that, high fives all around, but we don't have much to show for it, I think, now, about a month later, right? So overall, I think markets have been basically flat to slightly down over the course of the quarter. The US actually has been the better performing market in relative terms, and it was kind of flat, and international markets have tended to be lower. Bonds have been lower in general, interest rates slightly higher. So there really hasn't really been a great place to be anywhere in this market. It was kind of a a pretty forgettable quarter overall across asset classes, right? But we can't always win, right? We've had a number of very good quarters in recent memory, and this wasn't one of them. It wasn't terrible, but you know, it is what it is. In terms of sector, interestingly, I think financials have been the best performing sector. And, you know, we talked about financials as being one of the cheaper areas of the market.
Right, they were laggard.
I think in previous quarters. And I think the fact that the yield curve has steepened over the course of the quarter, which is just an ugly way of saying that longer term interest rates have gone up, I think that helps financials in general. So they responded well to that. But, you know, even financials were up about 2.7% in the quarter when, you know, a lot of other sectors were down. Industrials, materials, consumer discretionary was another kind of okay place to be over the course of the quarter, and so was healthcare. Right. So, as I said, we made new highs at the end of August, and then September has been a terrible month, right? We've had a correction in September. And I think Stan and I were having this discussion prior to this this call about September being traditionally a bad month, right? There's just something about September that it tends to be
statistically the hardest
statistically
month for the S&P 500 over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
which means that sometimes, you know, it's still good. So you can't game that. But it just works out that way.
Yeah, you can't really play seasonality or anything like that. I remember back in the day when I used to audit commodities firms, and they used to have commercials on, hey, get ready for the heating oil season, and therefore our futures are going to be up in heating oil. It's like, well, that happens every year. Prices rise when, yeah. You know, in that time of year. That does not mean that you should go out and buy futures. And the same thing with stocks in September. It doesn't mean that you should go out and short a bunch of stocks in September because it's automatically going to go down. I mean, it's just kind of an anomaly that month happens to not be as good as some of the others. And maybe that has something to do with volume in the summer. Mm-hmm. And then kind of coming into September when the traders come back in a session. I don't really know. I mean, I don't know if there's a great explanation for it.
The MasterCard comes due after a great vacation.
Maybe that's it, huh? But I think right now, I think we have an interesting period in the market because, you know, we can say the reasons. I mean, I think inflation is one reason that we've seen this market pull back. You know, inflation's run a little bit hotter than we expected, maybe, and maybe longer than most have expected. You know, so it's still running hot, and I think will persist. And then, you know, the Delta variant kind of, you know, having people put their plans on hold. I think that, you know, for consumer discretionary stocks and, you know, companies that rely on travel and hospitality and gaming, I mean, those have all, you know, not been as robust a recovery as I think people thought at this point, with, you know, vaccination rates increasing and then just kind of having the, everybody to kind of mask up and socially distance again. I think that's a big issue. And then the third thing is, you know, legislative risk, that the market is kind of pricing in this uncertainty right now, that we do not know what sort of legislation we're going to get from the Democrats and whether or not they're going to get it over the finish line. And, you know, so is this human infrastructure bill, which contains a lot of tax increases, is it going to pass, you know, in that $3.5 plus trillion state, or are we going to see something much less? And I think that the good money would be on that we're going to see something in a lesser package. But and we can all discuss, you know, what that's going to mean for the markets. But overall, if it got passed in its present form, I can't see the market reacting super positively to that.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a mixed bag. And the big question as well is also, you know, will the debt ceiling be increased in time to avoid trouble on that front? You know, it's all kind of up in the air right now. I think there's been another factor in the recent sell-off, which has been just, you know, comments from the Federal Reserve about tapering, right? And I think I always end up circling back to the Fed and what the Fed is doing, because I think at the end of the day, it is the most important factor that drives so much of the price action that we see in markets. But I think, you know, their renewed interest in tightening monetary policy and the use of the big scary T word, tapering, is also worrying to investors, right? And, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, I struggle a little bit to, you know, believe that they are truly serious about tapering. You know, this idea of tapering is not new, right? Right. I mean, I think they started, you know, making noise about it all the way back in 2012, 2013, maybe. Yeah. And
two Fed chairs ago.
Right. And, you know, back then, if you look at, you know, the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, for example, which I always like to look at as a proxy for the monetary base and for how loose the monetary policy is, you know, back then it was maybe something like $3 trillion. Now it's about $8 trillion. So, you know, and we're dealing with the pandemic and we have, you know, the debt ceiling negotiations, and we're trying to pass a huge infrastructure, very ambitious infrastructure bill. And so it's a little hard for me to believe that in this environment, knowing that they've really failed to implement any meaningful form of tapering in the past, it's hard for me to believe that now is the time when it's actually going to happen. You know, I think a lot of what the Fed does, and I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast, is about projecting this sort of credibility and looking like they can be the bad cops if they have to, but it doesn't necessarily translate into action. It doesn't always materialize. If they are serious about it, you know, I think that would be a very worrying development in terms of, you know, the stock market, and I think that would create a very, very challenging environment. And I would say that's a key risk to the market, is what a lot of people would call a policy mistake, which, you know, is it a mistake? Is it not? I don't know. You know, traditionally the Fed is supposed to tighten when things are good, and traditionally the Fed plays an important role in actually, you know, triggering bear markets, really. I mean, if you right. think about it historically, and if you think in terms of pre-2008 type of market dynamics, you know, when the economy gets good, the Fed starts tightening. Eventually, they do one interest rate hike too many, and the yield curve gets inverted, and the market tanks, and the economy goes into recession. That's what is supposed to happen normally. But I would say that since 2008, we're in this very different type of environment where monetary policy is consistently extremely, extremely loose. And central banks have effectively made themselves into some sort of custodians of market performance and economic performance. And so, you know, I find it difficult to believe that this time is going to be any different and that they're going to shift into into tightening mode. But again, you know, crazier things have happened.
We'd have to have a huge print on that inflation number, I think, for them to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And the Fed keeps insisting that all this inflation is transitory. I don't know when they're going to admit that they potentially would be wrong on that. It's years, I don't know, years later of hot inflation before you could say that it's not transitory and it's more permanent. But, you know, we look at wages, we look at everything that we purchase right now is more expensive. And that is a fact. Now it's a matter of how long that persists. And, you know, I think the real risk here is that we see a significant amount of wage inflation. And, you know, when we say wage inflation, you go, well, wait, I want to earn more money. You're like, yeah, I understand that you want to earn more money, but wage inflation is very stubborn because you can't just go, hey, Dan, I just paid you a bunch of money because inflation's hot. And now I've just decided that we're going to pay you less now, you know, and he's going to be okay with that. You know, hey, right. The inflation number's kind of coming down, so we've decided to cut your salary by 5%, mm-hmm. Dan. Dan's scowling at me right
hypothetically,
now.
Hypothetically, Dan.
Hypothetically. I mean, you know.
Keep the podcast running, okay?
So it's one of those situations where I do think that this is going to persist a little longer, and if it does run too hot, the Fed may have no choice but to actually taper. Mm-hmm. And it's become so politicized now, and no Fed chairman now wants to put the brakes on anything, you know, so, and no administration wants them to raise interest rates. So I think it's just a difficult situation. The Fed is, you know, in this sort of not too hot, not too cold situation, and they'll always let it run a little more hot than cold.
Well, we were looking for inflation. I mean, the difference between when the Fed started talking about tapering and now, I mean, the biggest difference is inflation, right? So, I mean, the Europe in particular, Japan, and to some extent the United States, we've been looking to create inflation, and here it is. Ta-da! You know, and now the question is, you know, how do we deal with that, or how does that possibly back the Fed into a corner where they feel like they have to do something? As far as Syl mentioned the you know, the budget crisis and you know, we've had threatened government lockdown and all of that jazz, and we've seen that movie before time and time again, and I've seen analogies go back to 2011 about what they're doing. That worries me a lot less than the Fed. Are we agreed on that? Right,
yeah, they're going to get
that,
it done.
That they always find a Band-Aid that's just enough to keep things going and kick that can down the road for another Congress. Right, so
I agree. Yeah,
I mean
it's a tail risk. It really is right. A tail risk.
It's one of the reasons why this might be the time of year when, you know, things pull back. Mm-hmm. Right, but we've seen this movie before, and markets have recovered each and every time. Will this time be different? Well, who knows? I mean, we're not going to make a prediction, but if you've seen this movie enough times, that you start feeling more assured that you know exactly how it's going to end, right?
Yeah. And again, I think Clint makes a great point about the labor market, and I think there's really been a shift in labor market dynamics, and that's always been one of the factors that a lot of people pointed to when it came to low inflation over the last decade or so, was always that the labor market was fairly weak. And now, I mean, if you look at, there's some really interesting stats about people's willingness to quit their jobs, for example. So people this year are now, for the first time in a long time, you're starting to see the number of just resignations really go up significantly. And that's a symptom of, you know, workers just feeling stronger, feeling like they have more pricing power, like they have more options. And you know, that's a very different environment than what we've seen in the past. We've seen a very employer-driven and employer-friendly labor market. And I think that shift has very, very profound implications on a number of things, including the inflation outlook. I would agree.
I don't like how you're feeling, Dan, with all of these
ideas.
Sort of don't thoughts. Get any ideas. Yeah. There's no pricing power in marketing jobs at all, Dan.
It's a very small sample size, but like I feel like in the last few months, more than ever before, I've talked to more and more people that are in the prime of their earnings power that are ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Take it easy, you know, sip an umbrella drink for the rest of their lives and, you know, enjoy what they have. And maybe that's a byproduct of the 18 months of gains that we got off the COVID lows, right? And maybe, you know, people from the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, et cetera, that have seen, you know, their stock prices, you know, of their companies go up.
And their houses.
You know, 1,000% from those COVID lows or mm-hmm. and their house prices. Thank mm-hmm. you, right? Again, small sample size, but you know, maybe there are an inordinate amount of people that are ready to exit the labor mm-hmm. force.
Exit the labor force or move jobs. I mean, there's a whole supply and demand issue here. And you know, if you are on the right, you're saying, oh well, you know, it's going to fix itself because we just stopped all the unemployment. But yeah, you know, unemployment benefits and things like that, paying people to stay home. I don't know if I really buy into that rhetoric at this point. You know, I think that you are going to see a persistent deficit in the number of workers. And I think it's COVID has just shaken people. And I think it's just a situation where they're looking at what is important to me now and, you know, what is my... You know, where do I want to work and what are the jobs that I don't want to work in? You know, so I think that there's a lot to be said for all of that. And I think we see this shortage across many different sectors and in supply chains and everywhere. And I think what COVID's taught us all is it's easy to turn things off, but it's really hard to turn things back on. And that's why you're seeing this persistence in the inability to get inputs for a lot of these things, for silicone chips, for everything. I mean, you can turn the lights off, but to turn them on is extremely difficult. So, you know, we're seeing that this is going to persist for a number of years. These supply chain issues, these employee issues, you know, and being able to get labor. And, you know, I just see this as being a multi-year issue, and we all want it to heal itself up quickly. But the reality is that it's going to take a little while here. And this recovery is likely to be slow. And, you know, some people will blame policy on that. I think I would just blame in general. I would just blame the fact that it just takes a long time to get stuff back up and running.
Yeah.
You know, and so when we look at the recovery statistics, you know, eventually the stock market might get a little mad about, you know, equities might get hammered because the, you know, it might be a situation where the earnings aren't picking up as quickly as we want them to. And right. if they flatline, then, you know, you'll see equity values reset. And so that's what I see as being kind of a risk in the intermediate term here, is that people are saying, hey, this is not a robust recovery. It's going too slow. My earnings are not coming up as fast as I want. And now the stock price should not be as high as it is. So I see there being some definite intermediate term risks now. Not saying you shouldn't invest in the stock market. I'm not saying you should make any allocation changes. I'm just saying it might take a little longer than you want.
Kind of like COVID itself, right?
I mean, correct.
The stock market was happy and everybody was, you know, I think personally, you know, upbeat as vaccination rollout occurred, right? Now we're just waiting for everybody that won't get vaccinated to get COVID so that we can finally, like, have a downturn permanently in COVID.
It's either natural immunity or it's real immunity. I mean, it's either immunity. One, whatever you get.
Immunity.
You're going to get immunity somehow.
We're going to get it one way or another eventually.
Yeah. One's longer and more painful. But, you know, I don't know if Syl has the same view that I have, but I, you know, I see us having a little bit more risk in the next 12 months that we saw in the previous 12 months because, you know, government stimulus may or may not be there. I mean, we'll see what happens. And then, you know, I don't know if we're going to see the blowout earnings that we have seen in the last 36 months. I'm not sure. I'm not quite convinced that we're going to see that yet, and maybe innovation is able to stay in front of it. But so what's your near-term view right now?
You know, what's tricky is there's really risks on both sides, right? I mean, depending on what the Fed does, We could see a sort of typical kind of deflationary type spike in volatility with lower interest rates and lower stock prices. Or, you know, we could see a different type of dynamic, which would be more of the inflationary type with maybe, you know, kind of sector rotation within the stock market and higher interest rates and things of that nature. You know, there's a great quote about inflation, and I can't give credit to whoever wrote it because I can't remember his name, but it was something about, you know, the thing about inflation, it's a bit like alcohol, is in the sense that the good effects come first. And inflation in a way is, and Stan alluded to that earlier, is something that a lot of our leaders have been seeking and trying to achieve, because there's a lot of things that look better when inflation is higher, right? There's too much debt in the system.
Right.
Debt looks
Your
better.
Your mortgage looks better.
Your mortgage looks better, right? So, and I think that's kind of, that's one of the reasons why I think beyond the kind of medium term and short term volatility and risk that we might see, I think inflation is going to turn out to be the bigger risk and the main challenge. That's because there are a lot of incentives in place to, you know, inflate your way out of some of the trouble that we're in now. And I think, you know, there's an inflationist mindset that really has taken hold over the last few years, where, you know, we're basically thinking inflation to be generally desirable and thinking that it is a good thing. And I do think that it might be a sort of relief in the short term. But I think the longer term impact is extremely, extremely painful, potentially.
So it is very much like alcohol.
Yes.
And we might get too much of a good thing, but we don't know yet.
Correct.
Well, I think from a governmental perspective, it might be desirable to have inflation, but from an investor standpoint, and particularly conservative investors.
A bond investor standpoint.
Oh, man. Disaster. It's a tough environment right now, and that's why I think right now is a great time. If you don't have a financial advisor, you know, or you're seeking one, now is a good time, I think, to seek one out, because I do think that the power of advice is very understated at this point. You know, you need financial advisors the most when things are the most uncertain, right?
Right.
And right now, holy cow. I mean, if you are a conservative investor, we have interest rates at near historic lows. Interest rates are highly likely to increase in the future. That's bad for bonds. We have inflation happening in front of our eyes. You know, what asset classes do you want to utilize while not taking too much risk? I mean, it's a tough environment right now to, you know, protect assets and to potentially grow your assets. There's a mindset that says, well, I mean, stocks tend to do well in inflationary environments. If you actually look at the data, it doesn't necessarily bear that out. Although right now, it's where would you rather have your money? Would you rather have them in bank accounts guaranteeing a loss? Would you rather have them in bonds? Pretty much at best, keeping pace with inflation and likely losing money to inflation. So stocks, real estate, those are some of the only things that might give you a chance, a fighting chance to get positive rates of return. And then the risk is increased knowing that the stock market is nearing all-time highs. So it's a tough environment right
now. That's an excellent point. I mean, just to put it in simple terms and thinking, you know, look, going back to the longer term, we had a bull market in bonds that started in the early 80s. Okay, the early 80s, people, right? And so anybody could make money in the bond market for generation, right? And we've had, except for a little COVID blip, and if you sneezed, I hope it wasn't COVID, but if you sneezed, you missed it, right? But other than that, we've had a bull market in stocks since 2009. So anybody, and I mean anybody, could do well in that environment, right? But forget inflation, forget whether earnings will be great or not, all of those things, as interest rates are where they are and the stock market is near all-time highs and, you know, so much higher than it was when that bull market started, it's very obvious to me that it gets tougher from here, period. Right? So, you know, I don't want to say curb your enthusiasm because HBO might sue our podcast. You know, temper your expectations of returns. Returns have been really, really incredible since the COVID low, but, you know, it can't go on like that forever, and it won't, right?
I agree.
So, you know,
I would agree.
Professional assistance might be a good idea at this time.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that it's going to get tougher in the sense that we've been in an environment where, you know, as long as you bought something, it didn't really matter what you bought. It kind of went up. I think it's going to be tougher and returns are going to be patchier and more uneven in the coming years, I suspect. And, you know, to Clint's point about seeking financial advice, you know, I think if you're unsure what to do, now's a great time to do it. I would agree. And I've often told clients that ultimately our job is to help protect their capital in real terms, right? Mm-hmm. And I think finding ways of doing that is going to become increasingly important in the medium term, especially when we look at things like the risks within your bond allocation, also the risks within your equity allocation having to do with some of the, you know, kind of distortions and trends and kind of momentum trades that have been happening over the last few years. I think now is a great time to get to take a good hard look at everything and make sure that you're positioned the right way, which doesn't necessarily mean making wholesale drastic changes and shifts. Sometimes it can be fairly small changes that end up making a big difference. But I think now's a great time to take a good hard look at everything.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us in this episode of Give Me Some Truth. I think in future episodes, we'll be delving into a little bit more on that equity allocation. We've talked a little bit about growth and value, but perhaps a little bit more about international versus domestic positioning, small versus large. So thanks for joining us on another episode of Give Me Some Truth.
Wachter Conin Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Wachter Conin Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Thanks for listening, and for further information, please visit WachnerConin.com.